power of our diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
One. Deadline.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
It's episode 14.
God.
Of Diplomacy Cast.
14.
It's an adolescent.
It's yeah. It's growing up so fast.
It's a tween.
Yeah. I just wish this podcast would clean up its room.
Yeah, seriously. And by that, you mean...
Well, have any sort of organization whatsoever, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Episode 14 in today's episode. We're going to do a very brief hot-off-the-press mailbag
Some updates out there.
And then we're just going to jump into the big... Hot, wet, whack recap.
Yeah, this is another episode where we're going to spend a lot of time. We both went to a tournament, so we want to talk about it. And I think hopefully you're curious about how it went, and we had some shared experience that are pretty good.
Yeah, so. And in any event, you should at least listen to the interview, which is going to come at the end.
Yep.
We are joined by winner and
two-time
WAC champion now, yep. Eric Mead. No.
No, 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 that's not right.
Sure not, no.
Sure not. Adam Siegel.
Yeah, buddy.
Adam Siegel. ASIG.
Yes.
So that's going to be good. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of good things to say and maybe explain how he keeps convincing people to allow him to win. So yeah, that's going to be good.
Know. That's sort of how you play this game, I guess.
I guess.
I wouldn't know.
You're so bitter.
I am pretty bitter about this tournament. Questions, feedback, consolation.
Subscriptions.
So, yeah, whatever you need. Press at diplomacycast.com or, even better yet, subscribe to us on iTunes and... There's a Facebook page.
Facebook.com/diplomacycast. It's pretty good.
Some keep mysterious, helpful person keeps updating it.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah.
Hot off the press right after this.
Boom! Hot off the press?
Hot off the press?
Yeah, there's people don't use a press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot?
We just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. The press.
I'm not saying that.
Okay, cool. So we have like the shortest and saddest hot off the press ever today.
We have a lot of material for the rest of our... I mean, we're going to talk about WAC a lot, so we don't really have a lot of time.
It's true. Mostly I just like that bumper. Every time. It's so hot.
Yeah, it's so catchy.
Oh, I forgot our other segment's called The Circuit. Remember?
Yeah, I remember.
We don't have a bumper for that. So coming up after Hot Off the Press... is The Circuit.
Well, unless a bumper gets made.
That's true.
We might make a bumper.
In the future, there will be a bumper for The Circuit. Moving on.
I love that we've really gotten everybody excited about a potential bumper.
Yeah.
It's
called adding value, buddy. Adding value.
All right, what do we got?
Will Black from New Zealand writes, is St. Petersburg an Eastern or Western supply center? Yeah, we're not going to answer. I just wanted to read it. Thanks, Will, for the email.
I hope it says just kidding at the end.
No, it sure doesn't. It's that New Zealand wry sense of humor. I actually really just wanted to read one thing because we had one guy, Mitchell.
Because if we did this whole thing for you to do that joke. Thanks, Will Black.
That was awesome. So worth it. I'm almost not going to read the other one. The only reason that I wanted to read something on the show was we had one guy who lives in New York and wanted to know about getting hooked up with some face-to-face diplomacy. His name's Mitchell.
Mitch. Cool. Or probably Mitchell.
And we had another guy being Robert Primus.
Oh, Robert.
Friend of the show.
Friend of... he was at WAC this year.
Yeah.
Good to meet him. Again.
And we hope this is out before then, but...
It might be.
Yeah. Robert wrote us to tell us that he's actually throwing together a face-to-face event on Sunday, the 19th of February, in New York City. So we seem to have a lot of New York City listeners, so if any of you are listening...
Let's just throw it up on the website.
Oh, well, he says he's having two... yeah, right. Throw it up on the website. That's something we just say we're going to do. We don't actually do that. He writes, New York City will have a face-to-face game on Sunday, the 19th of February, and tentatively one on Saturday, the 25th of February, based on express interest. Both will be hosted in Harlem at Robert Primus's apartment. If you are a player in the area that is interested, feel free to email Rob at rprimus00@ccny.cuny.edu.
Cool. How do you spell Primus?
RPRIMUS00 is the email.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was it. there was
No. If we think of it, we'll throw it up on the website, and if we remember, we'll throw it up on the website so that people maybe can find it, and maybe we'll throw it up on Facebook as well.
If not, just Google Robert Primus. I'm sure it'll come up eventually. That's all.
That's it. No, it's
now
good.
We get to talk about
WAC. We get to talk about what we're excited about.
Yeah.
In the future, there will be a bumper for the circus.
Wow, that was a great bumper.
This is a total gamble on your part, right? You're just gambling if there's a bumper.
It might just be some crappy guitar song. You never know. It'll be some noise.
Some of those guitar songs are pretty amazing.
Pretty darn good.
Even if that band broke up.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah, that was the Beatles.
No. That was Feeding George.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Whack. I was looking at my notes and then I realized I had none.
No, we don't need any because we lived and breathed this. It was actually I lived and breathed it and you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what
I lived and drank it.
Yeah.
More than anything.
It was really, you know,
it was a great tournament.
It was really, really, it was easily, I think it was one of the best. There's been other
top three.
It's top three. It's really because you weren't in second place, so you're not gonna count that one.
I was second to last place, if I had to guess, just ballparking it.
Yeah. No.
So I had a not a very good tournament on the boards, but the boards. I had a really super good time.
Yeah, we had 46 players.
46.
46 players.
We figured out 7 former guests of Diplomacy Cast.
Yeah, 7 former guests of Diplomacy, and who knows, at least one future one, because the winner hasn't been on before.
That's
Mr. Siegel, so we got 8.
Yeah.
And we might have any more. I mean, it was really great to see a lot of people. We played, 20 boards. Over the weekend.
Yeah.
That's a lot of diplomacy that happened.
There's some good Grand Prix implications in there to start your year off.
Exactly.
No doubt about it. That was a heavy set tournament.
And wow, we had some amazing boards where a lot of heavy hitters all got on the same board. And at WAC, we do the top board thing. So that was...
Yep.
That was pretty intense as well.
Yep.
So it was...
Adam Siegel first place, Andy Bartoloni second place.
Yeah, Andy Bartoloni was actually the overall winner. But
yeah.
You got to win the top board.
Top board, we'll cover that.
And we'll get into that with scoring.
Actually, you want to start there?
Oh, yeah, we can talk about
that.
Scoring
because I know we've never talked about top board style tournaments.
Yeah, we don't really... I mean, because they're not hugely popular, but I do think they're coming back a little bit. I think people are starting to miss it.
Well, WBC is going to have one this year, so you better know it.
Yeah, you better know it. So in that system, you have whatever scoring system you want. Doesn't matter. Ideally, you have 4 rounds, because if you only have 3 rounds, that means you only have 2 qualifying. But however you choose to do it, you take every round but the last round, and you figure out who your top 7 are.
Right. In other words, so at WAC, there was 1 Friday night and 2 on Saturday and then 1 on Sunday.
Right.
So we added up your Friday and 2 Saturday results, and the top 7 of those got to be on the top board.
Yeah, and so you just take those out, and you put those guys on a board together. You assign them countries at random, and then you
flush the scoring system down the toilet because you're playing a whole different game.
Yeah, it's a whole different game.
Just for the top board.
Yeah, because if you win the top board, if you top the top board, you win the tournament. And it doesn't matter if you came in 8th and you don't get a very good score. Yeah. You win that you win first place.
So the Moses, so top it, you mean most centers overall when the game ends?
Well, I say top it because it depends on the scoring system you're using.
And but generally a top board is just a real simple whoever's got the most when the bell rings.
Yeah, right? Often. But you could also
then as a tiebreaker what your score go again was.
Yeah.
Right.
If people finish on
9, whoever came as the higher seed onto that board.
I mean, it depends on the scoring system and how you're running it.
Yep.
But you make a determination of who the winner of the board is. You figure that out ahead of time. And then 2nd through 7th place is open to anybody. So
right. So there's still a point for everybody else playing right. on Sunday because you can still get as high as second.
Yeah, you can get as high as second. So
plus
like
all the best country awards and everything else.
And there's all that sort of stuff. And as Eric, I know you can tell us, like you can solo on that
sure
round
can.
Four
those
and get to second place.
Boy, those were the days.
Which you've done at least twice.
Yeah.
Twice. I think both times with Turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a creepy 2 year run at WAC.
So
with like Andy Bartoloni on both of those boards.
Yeah, it was really surreal. Yeah. It's like deja vu.
And this other guy also, yeah. Anyway.
So that's the top board model, and I think it's coming back a little bit because there's something really enjoyable that I think people like about you take the people that have done the best and you put them all in the same place and you say, mm-hmm. figure it out, guys. Just figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and it changes the game so much. Oh, I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but I've been on a few top boards and they feel just totally different from any other board at any other tournament because and you're kind of... It's almost like, I mean, everybody's trying to win at the beginning. Like, the early game feels kind of the same. But after a certain point, it sort of degenerates into this, like, people are, like, once they realize they're not going to win on their own, people kind of just start...
Doing crazy stuff.
Lobbying a little bit. It's sort of like...
It's very political.
Diplomacy squared, where you're just like, well, all right, the possible people who could win this are, like, France, Italy, and Russia right now. What seems the best?
Right.
You know?
And as our listeners know, we plan out all of our episodes pretty far out. And I know Top Board is one of the ones that we're going to do here pretty soon before Chicago so that people can kind of get that can get that feeling. So we won't spend too much time on it here, but I mean there's
shut down the
co-host. No, there's a lot because we could spend like an hour talking about Top Board dynamics and I'm excited to do it. But we had that don't deviate from the plan.
Yeah, you're right. We might run out of topics. So anyway, that's how that finished up. Adam Siegel first, Andy Bartoloni second. Here, I'll just read it. Nate Cockrell, third place. Adam Silverman, fourth. Chris Barron, fifth. Jim O'Kelly, sixth. Eddie Bresson, seventh.
Yep.
Star-studded top seven. Yeah.
Not too many surprises there.
Yeah, pretty good.
And Buffalo walked away with three best countries, by the
three
way.
Three.
It was ridiculous.
So he was this year's me, for sure.
Yeah, like, he was like...
Crushed the tournament and was second.
Yep, sorry.
Yeah. But he's the Al Gore of this tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry, Al Gore.
But it was good, though. It was really a fantastic event. I can't say enough good things about it. The scoring system, I think, we used what... World Diplomacy Championship in Chicago is using, which is this it's sum of squares system.
Yeah.
You pretty much just like it's really supply center. It's a lead based supply center sort of system.
Yeah.
You can read about online and we won't get into the details.
It's the one where you try and be bigger or
yeah, sort of
else.
Like be a little bit bigger. And I think what happens is once you get with a lot of lead based systems and I think it tends to, as soon as people see that they have quite a large score, they tend to want to end the game for fear that people will catch up and sort of close that gap.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't matter how long the game goes on, it's the gap that matters.
Yeah, and people focus too much on who's topping the board when the scoring system really rewards topping it by a lot.
Right.
People kind of get to a point where they're like, well, I'm ahead by one. That's good, right?
Right.
And sure, it's good, but being ahead by two is a lot better than the system. Being ahead by three is a lot better.
And you also end up accidentally giving a lot of people a lot of points. So if you're two ahead of somebody and they're like, and you're both five ahead of somebody else, like that, your number two can actually get a lot of points.
That's true.
Not as many as you, obviously, because they don't have as many supply centers to square.
Yeah.
But they can still walk away with quite a large score.
Yeah.
So
it's good stuff, though.
It is good stuff.
It seems kind of natural to me. Maybe I'm just getting used to it now.
It's
you know, it's just like you don't worry too terribly much about stalemates most of the time.
Yeah, that is
because
nice.
Because people are just trying to be big, you know, like if there's a stab that you can see that takes you from, you know, 10 to 14 and gives you no chance whatsoever of soloing, you should still do it.
Right. But what's interesting is even though it sort of breaks down that stalemate mentality, which usually is sort of what retards solos, like it just sort of like it just blocks them from happening. You need that fluidity to make the solos happen. But I think people are so... There were no solos.
There was not. There was not a single solo. That were very close.
There was one that was stopped.
Yeah.
That was legitimate, and there was another one that was kind of close.
Yeah.
But out of 20 boards.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's hard not to say. Well, clearly there was something about this scoring system that. I mean, this is the eighth or ninth time we've done WAC, officially the eighth, but we had some little stuff in between, and there's often solos.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So it's interesting. It's just an interesting observation.
Yeah, we'll see how Worlds goes.
Yeah, we'll see how Worlds goes. That'll be, I mean, the Sum of Squares is not a new system that Chicago made up. I mean, they've been using it in Europe for a long time, Britain.
Yep.
England.
So I'm procrastinating about talking about my boards because.
Oh, why? Tell me about your boards.
Holy cow, was I not good?
Well, I was only on one board. I was only on two boards all weekend.
Yep.
You know, kind of host duties, let other people play, sort of thing.
Yep.
And we're going to talk extensively about that other board because we were both
at least we have that one.
We have that one that we'll talk about. But for my first board, I just played Russia, did fine with it. You know, one thing I want to mention, which kind of weaves into what we're doing here.
Yeah.
This is really one of the first tournaments I've been to. Second, but this one was the most extensive. Where people, there was more than one like live blogging it. Like there were two people updating Twitter.
Yeah.
Jim O'Kelly was updating a Twitter account for Matt Chicago Shields, folks, and Matt Shields.
At least keeping an eye on it. And I actually saw a couple of times like people whip out their cell phones to like see what was going on elsewhere in the tournament. Like they'd be like, really? Is that going on? And checking their Twitter.
Exactly.
And,
and then there was Facebook updates. Like it was very of the tournaments I've been to, it was one of the most wired sort of like online presence.
So
out there.
Definitely for Worlds, well, you're it's all gonna be there. So I'm not even gonna talk. I was about to say we'll make sure you guys know what to follow in case you can't be there, but you'll all be there. So.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. That is actually gonna be a great tournament.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just an aside because it was one thing I kind of noted.
Totally right. You're totally right.
And people talked about the podcast a lot, and so I don't know.
Yeah,
it was good.
There were two people there, and shout outs to the aforementioned Robert Primus and also Chuck Speakerman.
Yeah.
Both of whom basically. Told us that they came because they, at least partially, because they like heard our podcast and got jazzed up about going, and that is so awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, but a lot, it seems like between the last thing we went to in Chicago and now, like a lot more people have started listening. And so use us as a resource, everyone who's listening, you know, find each other and like,
feel free to come where we're, you know, if you're like, oh, I've listened to these guys for a while, just we'll tell you where we're going and we'll be there and we'll be there to give you a big high five and say welcome. So
if you've got friends who like diplomacy, tell them about the show.
Just a nice way of sort of like having something to talk about when you walk in a door full of strangers. You can always come and talk to us. We're not strangers anymore.
Yeah,
we're like old friends.
We're also not good at diplomacy anymore.
Want to be friends with us. Who are those guys? Those are guys that have this show where they talk about how to play diplomacy, but they're terrible.
I'm gonna work with those guys. I know I can step
there's
later.
Something about them.
Yeah.
No, so my first board, I was Russia, did fairly decently. I think I did an RT that, got
you
a draw.
Have no idea, do you?
No, I did okay for a while. I think then I got running on, and then I ended in a draw. Like,
let's see. I have some records here. Keep talking. I'll look up.
Oh, yeah. Look up the records. It might help me remember.
Round one.
Is there You go ahead and look. All I remember was I was Russian and I worked with whoever was in Turkey.
That's rad.
It's really great, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, here it is. That doesn't work, does it?
No, it doesn't.
You got 14.52 points.
Yeah, so I must
have
done.
Super glad I looked that up.
Yeah, it was really helpful.
Yeah, live radio, guys.
That board, I mean, it was fine. It was the first round. We were the first board to get over. We voted it down. See ya, we're done.
Yeah.
And we got some drinks. It was all right. It wasn't too stressful.
My first board was a living nightmare.
tell me all about
For one thing, it contained Eddie Brisson, Chris Martin, Peter Juergen. I was England. Eddie was Germany. And Peter Juergen was France. So that was like...
And Doug Moore and Chris Martin also on that board?
Chris Martin was on... Doug Moore was on that board.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Doug Moore. Yeah. That sucked. That was like the board where, like, when it got called out, everyone... England.
Oh, good.
When it got called out, everyone in the room was like, ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love the board call.
I... Yeah. I worked with Eddie initially. I actually managed to have an ally initially, and we
was he Germany or France?
He was Germany.
Okay.
And we shredded poor Peter Jürgen in France. We just, I don't know, I can't even remember why now, but it, I mean, I don't even want to talk about it. It was probably like the all-around worst game I've played in 5 years, despite like,
yeah,
despite not just getting killed at the beginning, like, but just like, I just built stupid stuff repeatedly and just, like, trusted.
So let me guess, you disappointed Eddie to the point that he just killed you.
I stabbed Eddie,
okay,
and it was, I mean, most of the people on the board thought it was a terrible stab. I thought it was an okay stab if I thought that I really had the help of the Russian guy. Who was Brad Bastin.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have his help. He had, like, these two zany fleets up north that were kind of not really doing anything except just screwing around, and I just really thought after I stabbed Eddie, because Eddie and I were going to, you know, after we were done with France, Eddie and I were going to kill him.
Right.
And I somehow thought that if I just stabbed Eddie that he'd be happy about that and join in, but of course he was just like, we joined in with Eddie, and they both, I mean, it was.
So, did they just wipe you off the board?
Yeah. At some point, I just got so disgusted with myself that I was like, Eddie, here, just, I don't even care. Just take him. I walked away. I bleeped up.
Yeah, you bleeped up.
Yeah, okay. So that happened. It was an all around embarrassing performance, and I was just like sick about it at the end of the game because I did so much stuff wrong on that board.
Well, that was your warm up round.
Yeah, sure. Warm up round.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wake up Saturday morning, all fresh. And,
well, because you got an early night, I'm sure.
It was kind of, yeah. Actually, it wasn't too bad. I got like 6 hours of sleep or something.
Oh, perfect.
Like,
that's actually, yeah, you bright-eyed, bushy-tailed then.
Yeah, so you got, what, two? Three?
What, hours of sleep? Like,
yeah.
Three.
Yeah, yeah. Rad. Board two in the morning also sucked. It's a totally different way, but it sucked. Like, because I think I kind of walked in feeling like in board one I'd done a dumb stab on a good ally and ended up getting myself killed over it, and so board two then I got a good ally again, and this time it was Mr. Andy Bartoloni, and it was going great for a while, and then I kind of just got into the Care Bear thing. Like, then I went too far the other way. I had like two or three just gorgeous stabs on Andy Bartoloni on Buffalo that I just didn't take.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was one time where I would like there was this one season that I remember in particular. I was Italy, he was Austria.
Yeah.
And there was one season in particular that we had done, like, as we're off doing other things. Like we were creaming the board. I did the thing where I opened to Tyrolia, but not followed,
yeah,
and was like trying to do some sort of a like go after Turkey thing, and I opened to Tyrolia and then basically had like nothing better to do with that army the entire time except like march it all the way
around
like through German,
yeah,
territory, but without ever taking anything German, and then eventually did in fact take Warsaw.
Yeah,
from,
yeah, I like doing that.
Yeah, yeah, from Doug Moore, who was Russia actually.
No, he must have been pleased.
Yeah, he was unpleased about that. and Andy and I were just like really working really well together. Like we were just creaming it with the and Robert Primus was the Germany on that board, I remember. And eventually I was kind of wandering into his dots too, because, you know, I'm a jerk, but like it was going good. And there was this one season where Buffalo and I decided to security bounce in Trieste. Like he was a little nervous about a piece that I had somewhere or something, and he wanted to see, and then he forgot to write it. It was a spring turn. And so my move to Trieste actually succeeded.
Yeah.
Plus, and I was already there, and it was damn well his fault that,
right,
he just forgot to bounce me back out. And
after
requesting I do it. And so I'm just sitting in Trieste, and I've got like two other of his things that he can't even cover that I could just walk into. And for some reason, I just didn't do it.
You're just like,
I was like, no, this is going so good. This is fun. I love Andy. We're having a blast.
We're winning.
We're winning. no, why am I going to do that now? He's going to be all pissed. I don't want to get yelled at. And I don't know. I decided not to do it, and there was like another season that I could have done it to, and I just didn't. And then I sort of started to peter out, and he started getting like bigger and talked me out of some stuff I probably should have listened to him on, and then he stabbed me. And at the time, I was pretty upset about it. Just because of the whole I care bared him, you know, right. Like I just. And at the time, I was, I don't know, but he bought me drinks and made me feel better.
Well, that's the price of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that and ended up being the best country for him.
Yeah, it was. Best Austria. He did very well. I think he got to, I don't know.
14, 16
on that board. I was just sick about it. But, it, like, so that was round two. So two games, two eliminations.
That's a double goose egg.
Yeah, I haven't had a double goose egg in a long time in the tournament. I don't think. I mean, at least if I like tank it on Friday night, I'll just turn in some mediocre results.
At least it's something.
Just
kind of
get off the. But no, so that happened. So two rounds, two eliminations. Then a lovely dinner is served in between rounds.
Yeah, that was. Oh yeah, I forgot. We should have mentioned the dinner. Prime rib.
Speechifying.
Yep.
Talking about Diplomacy Cast, plugging it.
Yep.
Everything. Oh.
Good
awesomeness.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And
then round three comes, and there's one too many people to make, however, there was five boards, 36 people.
Yeah.
So somebody other than Nathan and Matt and Mark. Mark's awful, like the tournament organizing people. Somebody else had to sit. And so I decided to be the grown-up and let it be me, just on account of, well, I mean, I was kind of sort of doing hosting duties also.
Yeah.
Probably lived technically the closest, which has been a tiebreaker before when, like, nobody wants it in other tournaments. When, like, nobody wants to sit out, you're like, okay, who lives closest to where the tournament actually is? That was also probably me. And it didn't seem important at that point. I was just like, you know, I could just go to our friend's birthday dinner with my girlfriend instead of school. It's fine. But
And then you stayed out all night.
Then we came back from the birthday dinner, picked up a couple of the people who were eliminated early. And
it was that bar.
Went dancing.
Yeah, it was good.
That happened.
That was really funny. I got like phone calls from that place. They're like, woo, we're having a great time. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's all that's in the background. I was like, I can't hear you. Yeah. Sounded like, well, I think it's to me, you did better.
Yeah, it's true. That was kind of a win.
Precursors of the previous two rounds. I mean, like, you might have just turned in another goose egg.
Still, though, well, I did. Through three rounds, zero points. So,
And then we come to round four.
Round four! Sweet, beautiful, glorious round four, where Nathan and I had our first successful alliance.
In a long time.
So I guess that was kind of a spoiler alert, but
We tables were assigned randomly by the computer, and it just turns out that we're both your hosts are on the same board, and I'm Austria, and you were Russia.
Yep.
And. I don't know who else is on. I mean, there's a bunch. There's other people on the board.
We had
a bunch of other people on the board, and I, you know, I knew a few of them, and I honestly, in Austria, I was feeling, oh, I might totally get crushed here. I mean, I certainly don't think. I mean, Eric and I don't have the best history of working together. Yeah. I mean, we often try it, mm-hmm. and it often falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I was definitely a little leery when I sat down.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, from my perspective, I'm thinking there's somebody the player in Turkey sort of felt like
that was Everett.
Yeah, Everett was his name. And I'd never played with him before, and he was actually really good.
He was actually.
It sort of felt like from the very beginning that, like, you got to him first and did, like, your evil Nathan magic on him and was, like... He actually kind of told me he was seriously thinking about going to Armenia right away.
Yeah.
And he was like, but that's okay because we're bouncing on the Black Sea. I'm like, yeah, still not really so okay.
Not that cool, actually.
And the thing that I was able to do to turn it around was sort of sow some serious Italy paranoia in him. It really... You know, I just told him, hey, Italy came to me and basically had already made up his mind that he was going to go after you first, and which might or might not have been true. I can't remember.
No, Italy wanted to just take Turkey out as quickly
as
possible.
Okay, so Italy starts telling him the truth. Yeah, that's right. Italy wanted AIR right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of able to use that as something to persuade him. I mean, he still wanted to bounce to the Black Sea, but I was able to use that to persuade him to not do the other thing also. And I think you and I bounced in Galatia, which is kind of lame.
It was really lame.
Spend all that time talking about what a lame.
Well, we both talked about how it was lame, but we were sort of deciding what we wanted to do. There's this AIR thing, but it was sort of like, you know, right from the beginning, though, and this is what we've talked about this a lot on this show, what will happen in one theater, you know, where you're starting to go, especially in 01, like what happened in like the French really kind of opened, like, not badly, but there was a sea lion. Mm-hmm. So England and, well, partial sea lion because Italy didn't involved.
No, it England, wasn't a sea lion. It was
not a sea lion. I'm sorry. Whatever you call attacking France.
Yeah.
There's a word. Wilson? Wilson,
let's get him.
Yeah. There's a word for it, and I am... Churchill? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, whatever it is, you go out and you open to the Channel, you open to Burgundy, and then Italy would open to Piedmont. Italy neglected to open to Piedmont. The other two happen. And France is seriously crippled and remains crippled for the entire game.
Right, right. And that was the other part of it for me, is I was kind of getting the feeling that was going to happen even pre-Spring 01.
Yeah.
But it really became important in Fall 01 because I basically, like, England, who was my call, who I've played with a few times before, kind of, you know, he and I were going, hey, let's, you know, let's be friends. Let's work together, and kind of trying to swap a little bit of gossip. And honestly, I've had a hard time working with my call in the past, and so I was like, okay, well, let's give this a try. We'll see how it goes. My call, I was making fun of him for it during the game. My call has this habit of, like, playing well with me for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden just being like, Eric Mead's going to attack me, like, when I'm not. But it seems like every game I play with him, like, all of a sudden he just makes up his mind that I'm coming for him and reacts, and I don't. But so this time, you know, but we usually have a good year or two, and so we were kind of gossiping for the first year, and he's telling me his inclination early on is to work with the German, and I'm thinking, well, I'm Russia, that's no good for me, right?
this is not going well for me.
Yeah, this is not so good for me, and so, you know, I have to play it cagey, but I don't really have very many options at that point. And so I go to the German, I'm like, hey, what about Sweden? And he says, yeah, well, we'll see, I'm not really sure what I'm gonna do, you know, standard kind of stuff. And then follow one, well, did we see anything interesting in Spring 01? Germany made it to Burgundy.
Yeah, Germany made it to Burgundy, and the what's this? And England made it to the Channel.
And England made it to the Channel.
And it
no,
was,
or maybe he didn't even.
No, he did, because the French covered Brest in the fall.
Yeah, you're right.
Which meant they built only one and lost Paris.
Yep, that's right. The thing walked right in. Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah. But so the fact that the German made it to Burgundy was the thing you were talking about.
Yeah.
Sort of like looking at the other side of the board, you're like, oh, okay, it's
going to this is going to be bad.
Yeah.
It was not good.
They were going to go fast. And at some point in there, I think maybe the German player, his name was Phil, I'd never played with him before either.
Yeah,
what kind of decided my course of action is he came in and I said, so how about Sweden? And I know what he was trying to do. He said, well, you know, I think I'm just going to go ahead and bounce you. I thought I should be honest with you. Which I get that.
Yeah.
But given that, like, nobody was telling me anything other than, oh, it's an EG, oh, it's an EG, oh, it's an EG.
And the board is screaming EG.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the German ends up in Paris, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, this can't be good to me. And so I reacted / maybe overreacted a little bit because I still felt like the Italian was kind of like into this AIR thing.
And he was.
And Nathan was the one I wasn't sure about. But I was like, well, I mean, Nathan might work with Turkey and kill me, but maybe we can do something interesting with this AIR thing after all. And so I decided to react to the fact that I wasn't getting Sweden by going to the Baltic and Silesia.
Which
in
was
the fall.
Which was, because it's fall 01.
Yeah, the Germans about to build two, possibly three, I forget.
Yeah.
But
Knock, knock. Hello.
Yeah.
Silesia so Baltic.
I was just being petulant, I guess. I was just sort of acting out my angst about the fact that, that he did that. But so at this point, that's fine. I get Romania somehow.
Yeah, because I
give
you
up
have
the
it.
Black Sea.
Yeah.
I think the Turks in the Black Sea.
Yep.
At that point.
Yeah, and I'm doing something crazy with Italy, and we end up ramming his fleet into the into the Aegean, and it all goes pretty well in the east.
Yeah, and I'm still not, you know, I'm still thinking actually, well, let's, you know, I tell Turkey the total truth about what it is that I'm going to do. Still thinking that, well, if I don't like Nathan's move, or I don't like, you know, the combined Nathan Turkish moves, I have a backup plan, which is I can still try and talk Turkey out of it, and you know, then...
Oh, the combined Austrian-Italian moves.
Right. Oh, sorry. Yeah. If I see anything funny, you know, I figure, well, I've still got one chance to get out of this. Maybe I can turn it around with Turkey. But then... What did you... I can't remember what you did.
Well, what... I mean, like, this progresses, and I think... To skip over a few years, like the West really just sort of, it gets solidified pretty quickly, and the AIR, the three of us are like, whoa, we just need to get some builds out of Turkey and turn around, because France is offering very little resistance at this point, and we're kind of concerned about it, which is what drove, you know, any sort of... it removed a lot of the caginess that I would expect to have happened there, because it was like, oh, we have to defend against this.
Yeah.
Because England was kind of exploding. I mean, we had checked Germany.
Mikey was getting big.
He was getting huge, and there was nothing to slow him down, because by moving into the German hinterlands there, the German sort of whips around and is sort of stuck. And so you're not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere.
But I liked the move, because it kind of showed AIR that I was serious about AIR, if that's what they wanted. And so, like...
Yeah, and I've said before, I know it, I'm in Bohemia.
Yeah.
And Italy's in Tyrolia, and we're monkeying around, and it's good stuff.
And the German, then the next thing that happens when that's, and I'm not sure that we even took very much in the way of Turkish dots other than, like, Bulgaria, but we were sort of, like, wearing them down and getting into, we might have taken one when it was still all three of us working together.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to remember exactly what the sequence was that kind of gets it to the mid-game, because France has fallen apart and Turkey's fallen apart, effectively.
And you're in the north, you've sort of are winning somehow the Northern Matter, because you're working with Mikey.
I guess Mikey stabbed the German, finally.
Yeah, he stabs the German.
I think I was working on him to do that, and finally he says, yeah, okay, I'm going to do it. And it was... It was a little bit surprising. Like, he did it a little early, but it actually paid off pretty well for him.
Yeah.
And I was giving him some help, and I was kind of showing him a lot of love. And then Germany starts falling apart. So then our original reason for having AIR is no longer so necessary, because there's no EG on the other side of the board. We can sort of proceed to, okay, what now?
Yeah. And so I... You know, after consulting with you a little bit, but not really too much, because I don't want you to go to the Italian with it, I just gut the Italian. Like, I think I stabbed for... No, that's not what happened.
I got one. I got something Turkish that was...
You
about
got something
to be
Turkish
or something.
Well, before that, I wanted to assure you, so I actually gained, like, Bulgaria. No, I gained Constantinople or something like that, and I waived the build.
Yeah, that's right. When you went to six, you waived
it
and
the
went
build.
To five on the board, which was kind of remarkable. I was like, I kept waiting for, because I think that season, whatever it was, 02 or 03, had not gone so well.
Right.
And I didn't build that year, and I was kind of waiting for, uh-oh, here it comes. And then Nathan was just like, wave. I'm like,
so... This
wow.
is that, which, you know, so Eric's happy. The Italian doesn't feel threatened.
Yeah.
And so in the fall, I stabbed the Italian for three.
Yeah, that's no, you stabbed him for two, and then you had the one in your pocket.
I had the one in my pocket. Yeah. So I stabbed him for two, gave you a Turkish, got you the Turkish center out of it, and laid down three. And
I
like,
built two.
Bloop.
Yeah. And then, yep. And so. It was weird because it was just like, wow, is this really happening? That like Nathan and I are like early game and mid game working together at this point.
It was strange.
It kind of was really happening. And then I made a mistake on that very turn.
Yes, you did.
I remember. It was kind of to the point where Germany was basically dead. Turkey was basically dead. Italy was nowhere near me.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like going to gain anything out of that. And Nathan was my ally, you know, and I wasn't going to like go stab Nathan because he'd just built three and that would have been insane. So I kind of wanted to do my thing where I'm like, well, I've been playing well with Mikey, I've been playing well with Nathan, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do yet. I can just kind of spend a year like cleaning up the dots,
yeah,
and like then really make up my mind what I want to do next the next year, when really there was nothing to do the next year. There was no dots to clean up. There was nothing I was going to get at that point. And so I really had to make my decision right then and build a fleet on the north coast of Russia. And I didn't do that because I just thought I could sort of jerk around for another year. And I ended up building an army in St. Petersburg because, like, Mikey was in Norway and I argue that it was a security thing. And I'm looking at it and just the way my pieces were, I was like, well, I can still take Norway with a couple armies.
Right.
If I decide to attack Mikey. And then I built also like Army Warsaw or something silly like that. Or maybe I even built St. Petersburg, Moscow or something. Anyway, I built two armies and I really should have built a fleet at that point. And then I sort of looked at it in the spring and I was like, no, I really am attacking Mikey right now if I'm attacking Mikey because there's nothing else to do. And I'm not attacking Nathan because I can't. plus this is perversely strange and exciting.
Yes, exciting. Let's see what'll happen here.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so I had to attack somebody, and I just built armies. Like, my entire northern front was basically armies. Like, I had that
one. It was ridiculous.
It was pretty still. Like, I had by the end of it, I had, like, an army in Denmark, an army in Norway, an army in Sweden,
Finland or
an
something.
Army in like
whatever it was,
an army in Denmark, for crying out loud. All it did was sit there and get supported by the fleet in the Baltic for the rest of the game. And
that's all totally it useless
do. As we're like grinding down those like last couple of things that could really happen in Germany,
right? Yeah, we kind of like, I'm jamming the armies up in there and sort of like beating down the Italian a little bit. Eventually have a bigger fleet presence than he does. And what's interesting here, a couple of things that I think are interesting. A little bit earlier, the Turk, who we've just been beating up on, I was really impressed with his ability to just like, he just kept coming with ideas.
Yeah.
He's like, let's do something, which I really admire. I mean, I think more players should really like, I don't care if you only have one center left and it seems hopeless. Go and try and talk somebody into something. That's because honestly, I took him up on his last dot. Like with that last dot of his, we stabbed the Italian, and I think he
may have rebuilt.
He might have rebuilt or something. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But like, it was really cool. He did that.
Yeah.
And so we're cleaning all this up. It's eventually and the French, unexpectedly, now that once everyone finally realizes that it's going to be you and me sort of like rolling over the board, they've stopped beating up on the French, and he's back in the game. You know,
that's
like
true.
He's like holding down the Burgundy, Marseille, Picardy line there. He's just like holding that down. And it was cool to see, like, and he was starting to come to me and go, hey, why don't we talk a little bit?
Yeah.
And so it was nice to see him get back after just getting kind of kicked around for like 8 to 10 game years.
Yeah.
He was just like, oh man.
So my whole big offensive that I led on England, because I was like, kept just not being able to add another fleet to the north. Like, the next year after I did that one stupid thing, like, St. Petersburg was plugged up, and so I couldn't build anything there, even though I got a build, and then the year after that I didn't get a build. You know, so my whole thing just kind of ground to a halt in the north. And so I think after all that, I'd probably ended up taking two.
Yeah,
for Mikey, something like that. Like, I got Denmark,
Norway,
and I was done.
Well, you know, another little lesson there, because there is a lesson for our audience there. Like, try and like think when you're doing your builds, think about what you're going to be doing next, because you know things can turn pretty quickly.
Yep.
And if you think you're going to be attacking somebody, definitely maybe just risk it and build that fleet.
Yep.
The other corollary to that is you were all armies, but England had built too many fleets.
Mike was all fleets. We like piffed one of his two armies.
Yep.
And then he had like, so he was basically like six fleets, one army or something like that.
Which allowed us to do a lot in Germany. Like there was just there was not a lot of resistance.
Yeah. We got all the way. We got like past Kiel.
Yeah,
although we realized we were never getting like Belgium or Holland, because he had like Fleet Belgium, Fleet Holland, Fleet North Sea, Fleet
Skag,
Fleet
Skagerrak,
English Channel, Fleet. Yeah,
yeah. It would have been difficult. We could have gotten around the other side depending on you know how things went. But at that point, I think I was waving builds again, and because I couldn't do anything with them.
Yeah.
And I wanted to build more fleets, and I happened to have somebody in the way.
If I was in, like, serious tournament contention, I feel like I would have been, like, taking the risk and been like, come on, we got to keep going, we got to keep going. But at that point, we were like, we're the, like, tournament hosts. This game is done, and we could probably, like, wring one or two more dots out of somebody, but who cares?
Yeah, we just called it. Very friendly.
It was, like, 10-10.
Yeah.
I think you and I each had 10.
Something like that.
And then Mike had like 7 down from 9.
Yeah, everybody was pretty.
And there was miscellaneous, like France had a couple, and Italy might have had one or two at the end.
Yeah, it had two or three. Yeah, something okay. Like that.
So that's how that
but anyway, ended. Yeah, so there was a lot of little lessons there.
Yeah.
A lot of little things. I was reminded a lot of the show just because of, like, it wasn't one of those games. It was a game that got skewed because of, like, just out of the gate, the French player, who's actually an online guy that Mark Ward brought, who's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
But he just got railroaded really quick and then was kind of stuck.
Yep.
So it's really interesting how that will impact so much of a game if you got a lot of people there who know what, you know, they kind of know the first opening, the first 2 years really well. If there's one person that kind of trips,
yeah,
the whole game goes, because there's no reason for you to be in Baltic and Silesia
except that I know that there's an England-Germany alliance that's been forced by sort of their success in Spring 01, and so I have to overreact to it just because I know that they're gonna like cream France and then come after me, because why wouldn't they?
It was really 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 interesting,
and then
that drove,
so then that presented the From my perspective, that presents this thing where, like, I have to go do that, and then there's, like, 3 countries to myself that I really can't afford to be fighting if I'm going to do all of what I did also. And so I actually just have to sort of keep them off me with diplomacy. You know, like, you have to just have one front. And I think it was Chris that said that when we interviewed him, where, like, if you can't, you can't do it all with force. You have to do some of it by arrangement. And so I, you know, my diplomatic game was just going to, like, Nathan and to an extent even the Turk and just being like, guys, I guess you could kill me down south, but if you kill me down south, England and Germany are going to get huge. Yeah. So you'd be better off just leaving me alone and let me go and do my thing. And that worked. And, you know, whether it's a true argument or a like a persuasive argument, it's still what you should be doing all the time. Anywhere you don't want to be fighting, you should be going to the other players and making the case, like, I have to do this. You can't attack me because I'm doing something really important that's in your interest. And it's sometimes it works and sometimes it's actually true, you know, but even if it's not, you should still be saying it.
Yeah. It was all in all, it was a decent game.
Yeah.
And, you know, one that I think, you know, people can learn a little bit from.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. Don't do what you did.
Don't. Yeah.
And, never underestimate the power of waving a build.
That was a legitimate, like, interesting build wave.
Yeah. But that doesn't happen that often. Just because you can build something doesn't mean you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was pretty much, that was our board. And then it was over. And then we, I think...
We'll save the actual description of the top board, because A, we were playing while it was happening, and B, it would be more fun to hear it from Adam
Sandler. Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
Actually won the damn thing.
Yeah, he was huge as Turkey.
It was kind of a blowout, actually. It was
enormous.
Yeah.
And everyone else, as far as I could tell, was totally demoralized.
They were just...
So... Yeah.
I'm not really sure how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know how they. I don't know why they let that happen.
We'll let Adam tell us about that. Anything else before we go to that stellar interview?
No. Like, if you guys have any questions about the event that we might have, like, glossed over, I know that was kind of a long little war story there, but hopefully, it helps.
Yeah,
well,
we do those. They're the tournament recaps we get to.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. We promised everyone at the tournament that there would be recaps, and Andy Bartoloni said, "Does that mean you'll be telling them all what I did?" And I said
yes.
Yes, I will.
Yes, I will. But hopefully there's some stuff about it. But if you have any questions, drop us a line, and we'll get back to you about them.
Yeah.
And we'll see you in Chicago, which we're going to say every single time between now and August.
Yeah, that's true. But there are other things coming up. The San Francisco tournament really is happening.
It's in May. Mm-hmm. The first weekend of May.
It's really fun. If you live in California, you live anywhere, you got to go to that.
Yeah, that one's actually what makes that is the venue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's in Japantown, and like mm-hmm. it's usually during the Cherry Blossom Festival. I don't know if it is this year, but it's
food everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's good times.
Like sushi, Nathan's favorite. Yeah. All right, we digress.
Let's go talk to Adam Siegel.
After this. Joining us now, the champion, newly crowned, of WackCon 7 or 8 or 9 or so.
It's technically 8, and he is actually the only two-time champion.
Two-time champion from State College, Pennsylvania via Skype.
Is he from State College, or is he just doing the interview from State College?
From State College. Okay. Adam Siegel. Hi, Adam.
How are you guys doing?
Awesome.
Are we awesome?
I'm pretty awesome.
I mean, you just answered for me. I just wanted to make sure that I was awesome as well.
Well, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm having a really hard time.
Adam, we're going to call you back. No,
that's good. That's good. I like that. One day I do want to just freak out, and I'm not going to tell you when I'm going to do it.
Okay.
And we're just going to throw that up on the web. It's going to be great.
Sounds good. Sounds good. We may as well talk to Adam, though, I guess.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about WAC. I'm actually really curious. I've been holding back all episode about this top board thing, and I'm really curious what happened. All I really know, and hopefully Adam can fill in the blanks, I called the board. He was on it. And then, like, 4 hours later, after our board, which we've just gotten done talking about, he had, like, 30 million Turkish fleets all over the place.
He did have that, yeah.
That's all I know. I mean, and there something happened in between.
I actually looked at it, like, 3 hours in, and I was like, why are they still playing? I mean, who knows? So, go ahead. Tell us about the top board.
You know, I'm actually going to start by saying that I'll say something that I never, ever like to say, which was that Andy Bartoloni was completely right.
Ooh.
Yeah. What had happened was that the Russian player misordered in the Scram 1901, and he ordered Warsaw and St. Peter and Moscow both to go to the Ukraine.
Wow. This was a top board.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a top board.
For the people who did good in the tournament, just for the record.
Which is a shame, because the player who did it is a player I have a lot of respect for. But I had opened Black in Armenia. So he couldn't defend basically Romania or Sevastopol in the fall of 01. And he got Sweden, but he was still on 4, and it was kind of downhill from there. I plunked down 2 fleets, and the Italian player also stabbed Eddie Gerson in Austria for Trieste and put down 2 fleets. So Eddie was sitting in a pretty good position in the east. He could go with either one of us, but I guess that the Trieste move was not arranged. And he got a little upset. So, I mean, he and I were on 7 and 8 centers each in 1903, 1904, and everyone in the West was still on 5 or 6 because the Western players could not figure it out. They just, by the time they had to turn around a triple to defend against us, everything on the East was completely, completely sewn up.
So you were working with the Italian early on.
No, I was working with the Austrian early on.
Okay, despite him getting...
And that was Bartoloni, right?
No, the Italian was Nate. Bartoloni was France. We had Chris Brand in England and Jim O'Kelly in Germany. And they just did a dance for a couple years. And Nate in Italy, he put down 2 fleets, and I put down 2 fleets. And I was paranoid for years that Eddie was going to work with the Italian and not work with me.
Gotcha.
We rolled the east.
So what was Bartoloni's advice? I somehow missed it.
No, his advice wasn't right. It was sort of after the board. I think he was a little upset because I think that what had happened was as much a result of the misorder in the spring of 1901 than anything that any player individually did.
Yeah.
I don't think, for example, the fact that I went to five as Turkey was result of a particularly good move that I made or a particularly strong diplomatic negotiation. I had a neighbor that misordered. I got a really strong opening position,
right,
and I turned it into an alliance with a power who was next door to me that also got stabbed.
And also needed you.
Yeah.
And it is.
So it's a pretty optimal situation. For one thing, you opened as if you were attacking Russia anyway.
Yeah.
And he misordered as an added bonus.
Well, that's also a kind of funny story. Russia and Austria both asked me to write the same set of orders. Austria to actually attack Russia, and Russia to pick his fleet in Romania in the fall. So...
I see.
Wow. Yeah.
Again, the opening negotiations from both players asked me to do the same thing. I followed through. Yeah. I ended up on five. It was entirely one of those boards where... And, you know, the funny thing is that I ended up, you know, seventh. I barely made the top board.
Right.
the whole thing kind of fell into my lap.
Wow, that is quite a start. So,
wow, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous.
What? You didn't even have to work for that.
So, did Russia ever even build?
I think he had like a disbanded unit that he built in like 2003 when he was defending St. Petersburg, but no, he never really built.
Okay, but there's more to it than that because it seems to me that like even in that situation, like you could have a good strong early start as the Turk, but still you were like, I mean, I remember when I looked at the board the first time, it was like you were at 11 and the next highest was like 6.
So I would say that there were a few things that I thought that I did that were well, or the things that were good.
Yeah.
There was a build of an army that I made in a time when I mean, playing an Austria-Turkey alliance, Turkey should never, ever, ever, ever build an army. And I sort of snuck one in under Eddie Bersan's nose and explained it away. And I don't know if it was at a time when he wasn't really paying attention, or if he just, once it was down, he didn't feel like jeopardizing the alliance. But it was at a time when I could convoy directly to Apulia when Italy had almost all of his centers left. And the army really helped to stabilize the position of my position in Italy, and allowed me to get 2 Italian dots. And I think that that helped me to stay on top of Eddie's dot count in Austria. And I think really ended up helping me to top the board and eventually stab him when I think otherwise it wouldn't have happened.
Okay, so you did eventually stab your Austrian ally.
You know, it's interesting, actually, because I was at 9, Eddie was at 7, and everyone at the east was at 5 or 6. I think there was 1 Italian center left. And Eddie sat me down and said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to not do anything for the next 3 hours, and we're all going to look at each other across the stumbling line. And we're going to see diplomacy style. We're going to, which is, I guess you can explain to the audience members, is the European style where they know that they're ending in 1907.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, right an hour before the time, everyone's going to try and stab each other to top the board. I looked at the board and said, well, Eddie, isn't it better than if I do it a year before you do it? And he's like, yeah, but you know, we're not going to get to that for a couple of hours. So I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, if I do it the year before, then he should do it the year before I do it. I should do it the year before he does it. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, we'll stab him on the next turn.
Sure.
Right.
He talked you into that, basically. Yeah.
This is really Eddie's fault.
Yeah. It's
really
Eddie. I was not planning on stabbing him. And he and I had a good long talk about why I should do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I do that.
Do you do that?
I talk people into stabbing me sometimes, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You should not do that.
No.
That's really gonna hurt your game.
It's definitely cutting into my results a little bit, for sure.
No. All right. So actually, you know, this isn't, you know, to be mocking or anything, but it sounds like you kind of glided into this without too much, which is interesting on a top board, because you've been on more than one top board, Adam, and, you know, it just, the dynamics of them can be really just incredibly varied and also really intense, which is I'm more typically for a top board, I would assume the whole board would be like the West, where everybody's sort of like dancing around, trading like 1 or 2 dots back and forth.
Oh, definitely. Especially in a situation like a whack top board, where really the only thing you need to do is to have the most number of centers.
Yep.
Because that was what the scoring was. Basically, all you needed was 6 when everyone else was at 5. You didn't need 11 or 12.
No.
Sure.
And from that perspective, I mean, I when I drew Turkey, I was like, well, I'm hosed, right? Because I'm never getting past 6.
Right. I mean, that's what you expect. Because these boards, like, when... Once you, it's a whole different game. We were talking about this earlier. We were talking about how when a when you have a certain top board situations, depending on the scoring system, they can really devolve into these like one or two dot sort of a things. And it's so interesting how like the smallest mistake will just come, everything will come, will just unravel.
Yeah. In this situation, I think it was entirely a result of that one mistake, and it completely changed the board dynamic in a way that no one was prepared for.
So I guess my question, though, is when you were like that far ahead, like, and only, you know, 3 hours into the game, how does the rest of the board go, okay, well, obviously all six of us are going to lose if we can't knock him down a peg. There must have been some people that were mad at each other on the other side of the board, no? In the West.
Well, so there was a somewhat interesting moment. I had stabbed Eddie. I went up to 10. And Eddie said, great, now Andy Bartoloni and France is going to top the board. Because Eddie and I both had a number of pieces in Italy, and I didn't have really the manpower to keep it. And Andy had been holding the line on the other side. And it was very clear that Eddie was going to be able to help him into my centers if he had a year and a half to do it.
Sure.
The problem is that the other people in the West, they had nothing to gain because all those Austrian armies were up in the line and retreating back towards the Austrian centers that I was trying to take. And I was going to beat them there. So Germany had nothing to gain after my stab by allowing France to explode. So in a lot of ways for Jim and for Chris on the other side, they had a little bit of a choice to basically say, are we going to let Andy get up to 10 and take Adam back down to 7 and let Andy win the tournament?
Yep.
Or are we going to stab him? Maybe something susses out in the West in such a way that one of us gets bigger than Adam and maybe we can top the board.
Yeah.
But if they let Andy grow, there was basically no hope for them anyway.
Right. See, that's the kind of interesting stuff that happens on top boards. We alluded to it a little bit before, where at some point, some people kind of lose their own best interest motivation because they realize that it's just not going to happen. And then some people are still going after like the slimmest hope of topping the board. But
and some people are just going for second or third.
Yeah.
Definitely, because the WAC scoring was all four rounds count. So at that point, people really did still care about, you know, having a giant neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well,
so top
well
boards.
Done.
Top board.
Top board.
Yeah. I apologize. The top board. It wasn't a super interesting board.
Nah, I understand.
But people want to know about it. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I like to run a top board is because there's interest there. Like people, it's something to shoot for. Even if you don't even get a trophy out of it, you at least got to, you know, get on the top board and play sort of a different, a little bit more intense game.
Yeah, people were tweeting it and stuff, weren't they? Yeah. Like that was cool. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It was good stuff.
The other interesting moment that did occur was the season after I stabbed Eddie in the spring turn, I actually allowed him back into the centers that I took from him because I was afraid that if the West didn't stab Buffalo in France, that he was going to get really big. And so I wanted the option the season after the stab in order to work with him or not work with him. But when they did attack Andy, I did not let him take anything back from me.
Yeah, so, I think it's a good general guideline that if you're going to let people into your centers, do it in the spring. And then if you're going to eject them from those centers, do that in the fall.
No, but I wanted to see if we can get Adam to tell us why he keeps winning.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't understand it.
You know, I don't understand it either. And if I knew how I kept winning, I would, I think I would do better because I'd be able to repeat it.
But you are repeating it.
No, yeah, so it's actually interesting. I haven't done that well in a tournament in about 2 years. About 2009, I started doing this like really aggressive play style where I said I was just going to take every dot I could find and stab everyone around me. And it worked really, really well for a year. And I, you know, was doing really great until everyone realized what I was doing. And then everyone sat down on a board next to me and then they spent a year and a half killing me.
Yep. I went through the exact same thing a couple of years before that.
A lot of us do, yeah.
Only I got second in the Grand Prix for those 2 years. So not that I'm bitter.
So I did win the Grand Prix, but literally for, you know, a year and a half, I was just at the bottom of every tournament I attended.
Yeah.
And I needed to just start trying to figure out how to convince people that I wanted to work with them and really actually mean it.
Yeah. We've talked quite a bit about that sort of dynamic on this show, that when you're playing with the same people in the tournament circuit, they'll sort of develop a book on you after a while, and you have to do the opposite for a while, and you really have to do the opposite. You can't just, like, say that you're doing the opposite. You really have to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was... The strategies that I've been actually using in the last year have been ones that deserve an amazing amount of trust. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that a lot of times I just get screwed. Yeah. And it's hard to figure out... I think one of the things is really hard to figure out in 1901... And to me, some people say it's the least interesting season. To me, it sometimes is the most interesting season because it really does dictate how well you're going to be able to work with the people around you and whether or not you're going to all be sitting at five centers or six centers in 1904 or whether or not you guys are going to be on 7 and 8.
Right.
Well, yeah, you know, we could just talk about that for a second because that's really interesting. There are sure. people that say 1901 is the least interesting season or the least interesting year because, honestly, it's the whole game is sort of just the whole genesis of it. It's the big bang of the game. Like, everything rolls out from there, and it's you get a momentum that's hard to change.
For example, when they self-bounce in Ukraine, that's going to tell the story of how that board's going to go.
Yeah, here's the story. Russia is not going to do so well.
Yeah.
No, that's really... I'm curious that people are saying that. I've not... It's to having played 100 and something games that has been logged somewhere, you know, I don't know. That's what that's what Laurent says. I'm just going with that. It's still the part that's most interesting. Once you get to the mid game, I'm sort of like meh, you know, stalemate lines, blah blah blah.
Do you have a question for Adam?
No, I was just having a conversation.
No, I know people who say that they will take only 5 minutes for the string of 1901. And sometimes I do feel like I could write my orders in 5 minutes in the string of 1901, yeah. But I definitely can't get a feel for the other players. I can't get an understanding of what I want the board to look like in 2 or 3 game years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you spend all that time just sort of like gossiping and going back and forth about, you know,
who's this guy,
what's he do, what's your history with him, see who you feel like is telling you the truth, see who you feel like is lying. I mean, the early game's fun. Like,
yeah. It's and then it just goes down. Then you get bitter about the game, and then you're like, I don't like that guy. Mm-hmm. He's not fun at all. I don't like him at all. No, okay, so we don't know why Adam Siegel's any good. Okay.
Sure.
We got that.
He doesn't make mistakes.
Okay, yeah, not at all.
He's followed the path that I think, I know Eric has, I know I have, like the, when you have this period that you do really well at tournaments and, you know, it tends to be pretty aggressive because people don't know you, and then you have to go through a period of penitence. You have to do that.
Getting the crap kicked out.
You have to go through it, and...
I was watching Peter Juergen go through that moment at WAC.
Yeah. Sure. Yep. It's about his time, actually. It is about his time.
I actually would be curious to we've talked at length about this sort of phenomenon on the show before. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. I thought it was kind of fun for a while when I had a target on my back. Like I thought that it sort of added a whole new dimension to the game because not only do you have to like think about what people are saying to you, you also have to think about what people are saying to you given that you're you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
See, Eric, I think you're a better person than I am.
Oh.
you can just make this situation of sitting down to play a game and people really not wanting to play with you. I think you can take that and put such a wonderful spin on it, really, being like, well, they're playing with me, you know? So,
well, it definitely made the game even more challenging, as if I needed that, but yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that when you talk to a lot of people who have been successful, whether it's, you know, Eddie or Doug Moore or... you know, Chris, people do talk about getting targeted. And the truth is that people get targeted. You know, you go and you talk to people in 1901 and you hear rumors that people are talking about you. You're talking to people, you know, we should get Eddie off the board. We should get Jim O'Kelly off the board. You know, these conversations are real and they happen. And I think that it's a matter of finding out the best way to respond to it. And I agree that it does increase the challenge. And I'm not sure that... I'm not sure I've found a foolproof way of handling it.
No, there isn't one. Like, except to be like, wait a minute, that offer sounds too good to be true.
Right.
It is. Okay. Yeah.
Well, and just realize, I think what your point is, like, there's a point where there is a game moment or a time in your, you know, tournament where you're like, oh, wait, you know what? I'm in a cycle right now where people are just going to be gunning for me because everybody knows that I've won a lot lately in the last year or so. And it's just that knowledge, and then that affects your gameplay, and then you play really, really paranoid. It's really what happens. You're like, ah! You know, so what's interesting to me from what you've said is, like, you don't play that way. You keep playing sort of the same way every time and doing well. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that what I've been doing recently is going out in 1901 and trying to find friends, legitimate friends, not people I'm looking to screw over, not people I'm looking to jump, but really going out there and trying to say, you know, here's a potential strategy. It's one that can work for both of us. And the truth is that I've actually carried those to the end of games, except when other people mess it up or they, you know, stop making gains for themselves and for me. And that's when the relationship sours. It doesn't sour because I think that I can get some short-term gains and short-term thoughts from it.
we did play a game together at WAC, you and me, and Nathan and I talked about it a little earlier. I talked about it as that game where I care bared with Buffalo for the entire game. You were on that board also. you were the France on the other side of me, and I thought that game, I passed up a couple of good stabs on Buffalo that I could have taken, that you were frantically pointing out to me, as I recall. You were like, dude, you can take three from him right now, because you wanted me to do that because you were France and he was Austria and I was out of other neighbors, and so you wanted me to work with you and stab him, which probably would have been the right thing to do, it turns out, because then he just brutally stabbed me a couple of years after that, and it did not end well for me. but I know what you mean about that thing because what happened to me that game is I petered out, you know, like, had I care bared Buffalo and continued to go and actually made gains, for example, against you, which I didn't, he might not have stabbed me because the alliance might have continued to work and it might have continued to be good for both of us. But at some point I just started to fall apart, and he just sort of mercy killed me, which, you know.
you're so sad when you talk about this game. it really, you have this puppy dog eye sort of.
But it's
like,
not about me. It's about Adam. We're interviewing Adam now.
No, I remember sitting next to Eric on that board, and I remember that there was a season when you were really conflicted because you in Austria, I think, had just finished mopping up Turkey, and either you were going to go against me or you were going to go against Buffalo.
Yeah.
And you had this look of pain in your eyes because I think you really wanted to care about both of us, and you knew that you couldn't.
Yeah, I kind of did.
Not, I think partially you didn't really want to, and partially you didn't really know which one was the right choice.
Right.
And I don't know how it would have worked out in the other direction. It might have been the same. It might have been better.
That's true.
But, you know, I remember you coming to me the season after you moved your fleets in Tyrrhenian and Western Med, and you were like, look, you know, this is just the way the alliance goes, and that's what we're going to play.
Yeah. Any other standout moments from the tournament on any of the other boards?
You know, I have to say, not terribly. It was a tournament I didn't even think I was going to make the top board. I had gotten a tie for top with three other people in a second place. And the only reason I did make the top board is because there were four or five people who had, like, three top boards each or something that was obscene.
Right.
In other words, they stole all the points from everybody else.
So someone like me who had some, you know, pretty middling, middling to good results made the top board, when usually those types of results are going to put you in the middle of the pack.
Sure. But no eliminations probably helped too.
No eliminations.
Yeah.
No
eliminations. In a no drop. No, I was serious. In something where there's no drop round, like just turning in three results at all without ever getting wiped out actually helps. So.
I showed up bored.
Yeah, exactly.
I showed up. I did not fall over. Yeah. That's really what I accomplished at WAC.
Exactly.
Are you, Adam, do you know if you're going to Chicago for the Worlds?
I would really like to go to Chicago for the Worlds. I'm a little in between some things with a summer associateship. I'm a second year law student, and I'm going to be going away to Taipei again next fall semester. So I recommend that all the listeners go to Chicago. We just put on a really great tournament, and everyone should definitely go.
But you're not sure.
I would say I am 80%. I'm 80% there. I need to figure out some logistics.
So really, your plan is to just come win one tournament in January, take all those Grand Prix points from everyone else, and just sit on them.
And just take off to Taipei. Yeah. See you guys.
Yeah.
The way I figured is I won't be able to make a lot of the big tournaments in the second half of the year anyway, so the chances of me winning a Grand Prix are pretty slim.
That's true.
That is really true. So you just stole that from somebody else that's not going to be able to... Oh, man.
Yeah.
Stab.
Look at the people who also gotten pretty good results, and they'll be happy with the number of points that they got. I don't feel
bad
for second place. He did. He played a really amazing tournament. I was on three boards with him in four rounds, and, I mean, he was just dominating board after board after board.
Wow. You had to play with Buffalo three times and that happened. Wow. That's crazy.
Buffalo was amazing all weekend. I mean, he walked away with three Best Country Awards.
Yeah, no, three Best Country Awards. It was kind of obscene. I was a little embarrassed.
Seen that.
I was a little embarrassed.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm don't go anywhere. I have another trophy for you. Don't go anywhere. I got another trophy for you. It was ridiculous. I've never seen anything like that in my life. It was kind of crazy. So other than the top board, and I know, well, I'm not from the boards themselves, but there's anything else about WAC you want to tell our listeners about? Because we always like to give them, we're trying to give them just sort of a perspective of what happened there and, just any of those things. And if there's nothing, that's totally fine. And no need to feel pressure.
You know, I would say, and I shouldn't say this on a show where people are, you know, organizers for WAC. I would say WAC has become one of my top, like, three tournaments every year. It is just fantastic venue, fantastic people. It's a really good concentration of travelers. And, you know, just really generous tournament organizers. I highly recommend people who are like, I just need to make one tournament that they consider WAC. In terms of the venue, it's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. But the tournament as a whole, the diplomacy that I played, I really wish I had some good war stories.
Yeah, it's all right.
You know, I just, I don't. I have to say, actually, my favorite diplomacy negotiations the entire time happened with a guy, Robert Primus, who is new to the hockey. And
Friend of
the show, apparently. He and I, on the first round of the second round, he was Germany, and I don't even remember who I was. We had negotiations that lasted about 30 seconds for every round for, I don't know, four or five game years.
That was board where Buffalo and I were Italy, Austria.
The other side. So yeah. we were in perfect lockstep for about five game years.
Wow.
And our negotiations every turn were 20, maybe 30 seconds total. And something about it, we would look at each other, we would say what we each wanted to do, we'd nod our heads and we'd walk in. We'd go actually do the diplomacy and, you know, BSing for some other people. But it was just a joy to have, like, a player who just like, okay, we know what we're going to do, we're going to handle it, great, we're done.
I love that.
That's really fun.
It was actually a very memorable series of negotiations because there wasn't.
And that's a great feeling. Like, okay, we're on the same page. Boom, boom. All right, let's go mess with other people. We already know what we're gonna do. Let's just make it happen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, that's fun.
That's one of those things that kind of only happens in face to face.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That when the online guy writes you a message that short, it's because he doesn't really care about you. Like.
That's true.
Yeah.
You don't have that, like, sort of synchronization that you can really have. That rarely happens, but does happen every once in a while. Like, there's a couple of people I've been able to do that with. Not consistently at all.
No.
But just, like, the way the board was set up, and we were just like, yeah? Yeah. Boom. And we just, you know, write out our orders. We, like, would throw them in the box and then just go talk to people. And, you know, that's kind of like one of the fun things about face-to-face and one of the fun things about tournaments, because you get so many crazy-ass people there.
For sure.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, because a lot of people will criticize when they see, like, two people spending a lot of time by themselves and say, oh, you must be working together. Oh, you must be trying to plan something. And the truth is that sometimes they are. But if they're off for 5 or 6 minutes by themselves, it's probably because they can't get their acts together, not because they got something they've agreed to it and they're both happy with it. I don't know, Nathan... You have, like, a crazy friend who came and wouldn't give his last name, wouldn't give his first name.
Would that be Murdoch?
Yeah, Murdoch. I played next to him on a board, and I spent probably 10 minutes with him, two or three rounds in a row, you know, and I just could never, we could never get on the same page, and everyone would come up to me at the end of the season and say, oh, you must be working together, oh, you must be working together, and, you know,
no.
Never, not for a single season, not for a single move, no step. But I was spending all my points.
That guy's a real special treat. He's
I love him.
He's like, when you come to Seattle, he's like a little bit of local cuisine that you can sample while you're here. He sort of exists to torture the traveling tournament.
It's so good. It cracks me up so much. It's like you go to Chicago, you get a Chicago dog, you go to like a deep dish pizza or whatever. You come to Seattle, you cappuccino and Murdoch.
He's like, Murdoch, opening to Bohemia or something.
Maybe if he was on a different place in the board, he was Italy to my Austria. Mm. His opening negotiation was, you should let me put an army in Greece.
Yeah.
He proceeded to move to Trieste every turn for about 15 years.
Yeah, story checks out.
Yeah, he's been doing, he's been coming to WAC for nearly every single one, and he is the most hysterical person. He gets an idea in his head, and that's what he wants to do, and he's the nicest guy about it, and he always has a smile on his face, and you're just like, you're so frustrating. He's like, yeah, I am, aren't I? I'm still going to do this thing. Are we going to do it now? Just doesn't, every once in a while he'll do really well too. It's funny, like somebody will just go with his plan, his crazy, crazy plan, because that's just what they want to do. Yeah. And like, he doesn't deviate. Like, he's like, that was my plan. And that doesn't even care. He achieves his goal and stays at five while the partner gets humongous. It's weird.
Or sometimes he'll like get to, 16 because nobody's paying attention, because he's just doing his thing, and there and you can just sort of ignore him most of the time, and
whoops,
yeah,
it's good times. He's a really you should ask next time you see Andy Bartoloni, you should ask him about Murdoch. He has a special place in his heart.
Yeah,
it's really good stuff. It's really good stuff.
All right. We may be rambling here.
We may be rambling. We don't want to keep. This is what happens when we have an episode that's really not about strategy or tactics, but it's more about like an experience we had, and we're just trying to let people know that we had a great time, and we want to interview the winner. And any other parting thoughts before we ask you the question?
Any other parting thoughts? People should attend face-to-face tournaments. There's something really great about the face-to-face experience, I think, personally, over the online experience. I know that you guys have listeners who play online, and I don't want to like elevate one above the other, but I really think that there's a lot of people out there, especially people I meet at other board game conventions, who say, yeah, I play that online, but I just can't bring myself to like really play it in person. To find a local game, find a tournament you can attend, and maybe even find a one board to play on at a gaming convention that has other stuff that you're attending.
Sure.
Because I really find that, there's a couple people that you just play one or two face-to-face games and you just can't put it down. And it's just an amazing, it's an experience like nothing else, playing face-to-face diplomacy.
Yeah. And I think that our online listeners, a couple at a time, are just starting to kind of trickle out and, give it a try and be a little more open to it, which is great. The stuff that's going on online is getting bigger than ever,
yeah,
too. And
absolutely.
We're just hoping to make that connection also. All right, Nathan.
Okay.
I love asking
this question. All right, Adam. I want you to dig back in the back of your mind. What is the biggest mistake that you've made, on or off, diplomacy related, on or off the board? Just like a mistake. Something you were just like, wow, if I could do that over again, I would do that over again.
I will tell the story of the worst performance on a board I ever had.
Hmm. Okay. This sounds good. This is good. This is gold right here.
I want to say it's DixieCon, but I don't think it was, a couple years ago. And I'm Turkey. And the punchline of the story is that I don't get to read any orders because I'm dead at the end of the 19th.
That is impressive.
And yeah, the Italian player owns Smyrna, and the Austrian player owns Constantinople, and the Russian player owns Ankara. And all three of them were on the same page. They just wanted me off the board. And I don't know if it was because I was just being cagey or if it was because I was doing something, but everyone had just agreed straight up that I was going to be dead in 1903, and they made it happen.
Yeah.
it was two years ago, and it was... very successful board for them.
So before 1904, you are just not even, and you're Turkey, and you are not on the board. You are done.
I am completely done.
That is impressive.
That actually happened to me in my very first tournament ever, the exact same result as Turkey, and guess who orchestrated that alliance?
Nathan Barnes.
Correct.
I forgot. Really? Was that your first tournament?
Yeah, that was my first tournament. It's cool.
Oh, wasn't it with Jeff Dwornicki?
Yeah.
Oh, good times.
Anyway,
good times. Anyway, moving on. Oh, no, good. See, I knew there was something. There was something out there. Yeah. I've never been in... Oh, yes, I have. I've totally been that guy.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
We're rambling a little, so we don't want to.
It is hard to eliminate a Turk by the end of 03.
It is. It's insane.
Not easy.
The people who did it were pretty well skilled. It was like Eddie and Andy and someone else. They were. Yeah, you know,
who are apparently on every board you've ever played.
Exactly. Apparently,
a lot of boards with them.
Yeah.
Why do you, man? All right. Well, I want to thank you for stopping by and letting us, pick your brain a little bit, tell some more stories, and I know you're busy, so we'll hope to see you at Chicago because I think Eric and I will be there.
Yep, I really hope to be in Chicago. I'm looking forward to it, so it should be good.
Thanks for having me. For coming on.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead, signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.